Welcome back, everyone, to episode 3 of What the Bark, the Right Paw podcast, coming to you live from our own homes. Seeing as a few of us are based in Sydney and we're in the midst of a COVID lockdown, you can hear George's dogs barking in the background. We're all locked down.
Nathan, image of my apologies. Unfortunately, you can't tell them not to bark. The more you tell them not to bark, they bark more. They're just voicing their opinion to someone who's outside the front there and tell them to be wary. So I'll try and shut the front blinds. But yes, they're both here. Mary and Charlie are here joining us.
Yeah, no, I think we now know what dogs feel like being cooped up inside all day. I feel like barking a bit, seeing as I'm stuck at home during lockdown for the next couple of weeks in Sydney. Obviously, this might air a little bit later, but yeah, we're in the midst of a COVID lockdown. So we've got George and Imogen and myself all recording from home and just trying to, come to terms with this new world we're living in.
COVID been interesting times with just the way pets and just the growth in pets with COVID. It's, you know, we've been in this business for quite a long time and I've seen a huge growth in just the amount of
Absolutely. I think that's what we wanted to dive into today. It's a big topic and definitely from Right Paw, we've seen it. We've seen it firsthand. People are coming into the site looking more and more for dogs. And I think it's an opportunity that is great because people are at home. They've got more time to offer to a dog. But at the same time, we need to also make sure that people have that time to give to a new puppy. And Imogen, I know you mentioned that you've been seeing a lot more puppies coming in through the vet clinics as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We have definitely noticed we've seen more puppies in 2020 and 2021 than we ever really have before. I think the biggest change has been families who probably previously would have been working out in the office for long periods of time, who either wouldn't have had a dog or may have considered getting, you know, an adult rescue dog or something like that, have now made the switch to getting a puppy because working from home and that whole transition has given them the extra time they can commit to a puppy. So that's been the biggest shift that I think we've seen. Way, way more puppies.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've also had to think about it as to why it's sort of like you're in lockdown and you've got to get out. So you need a reason to get out. And, you know, a dog sort of gives you that reason. You've got to take them for a walk. You know, it's easier to say, I'm taking the dog for a walk. And it's just, I think it's one of the key areas. People are going, well, I'll get myself a dog because a dog is not only a companion. It gives me a reason to go out for a walk. I mean, how many times can you just literally go out for a walk on your own or with a partner, or as a dog keeps you, it gives you another reason to do that. And I know that in some ways, I've even read stories where the vet clinics, Imogen, are struggling to keep up with just the demand, and even some of the vet schools are unable to churn out enough vet doctors to teach and fill the void. Is that right? Is that something you're hearing or?
Yes, that's been a very interesting shift in the industry. I think the biggest thing we're seeing is because we're not getting vets and nurses in from international transfers, you know, people coming, you know, people come, especially from the UK and from Europe all the time, you're on working visas and then they go back again. And the same way Aussie vets and Aussie nurses go over to the UK and other places and, you know, do a few years there and then come back. All of that has obviously stopped with the borders being closed. So there is a huge shortage in vets and nurses at the moment. It's really interesting. So that's been quite intense. I know every time there's a lockdown, all our practices get busier because suddenly people are stuck at home looking at their pets, worrying about, that ear infection that I never really got on top of before is now really annoying me. So we get very, very busy during lockdown.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of memes and jokes on Facebook and social media doing the rounds, which say that even though 2020 was a tough year for humans, it was probably a great year for dogs who just all of a sudden noticed that their humans were sticking around a lot longer. So it was a great year for dogs. And also for rescue, you know, a lot of rescue animals were adopted in the last year as well, which is great. A lot of rescue shelters were able to offer a lot of families dogs and opportunities, which I think is also a great thing.
Yeah, that's definitely something we've seen at work. work as well. We've had and kittens is the other one. So people are getting cats as well. So all our rescue kittens are going much, much quicker than they were at this time a couple of years ago. So that's been really cool.
It is difficult to get a dog at a rescue these days. There isn't that many. There isn't as many as what there was sort of in the 80s and 90s, where there was sort of more your Jack Russell, your smaller dogs, your Fox Terrier crosses. If you look at what's coming through pounds today, there's a lot of your sort of working dogs, a lot of your hound crosses, your bull Arab crosses. They're not the smaller rescue dog is almost a premium now. It's very difficult to find anything that is a little Jack Russell cross like it was, 20 years ago. It's interesting how even what is a rescue and what is being bred by the backyard breeder is not what it was 20 years ago.
Yes, to a certain extent, definitely. I think the other thing that has been happening in the COVID period of time in the last year or so is a lot of people, so the small dogs tend to go first, basically. They do tend to get adopted first. It tends to be easier for people to fit a small dog into their homes. More people have got the kind of lifestyle that suits them. So certainly in Sydney, I think a lot of rescues have been selling out of a lot of their small dogs because of the increased rates of people getting pets. And so we're left with a lot of those larger dogs that might be the more difficult ones to find a suitable match for.
Yeah, and I really hope that, on a personal level, that we don't fast forward 6 to 12 months and see a huge influx of dogs coming back into shelters as people go back to work and go back, as life returns to normal. So I think that's something else which, is sort of sitting under the surface. We'll need to see how that plays out. But it's, right now, it's great. There's not as many animals in shelters, which is a really positive thing.
And that's an interesting point you raise. The short term solution to this loneliness is getting yourself a pet. But I honestly believe that those that do commit themselves to a pet today are a different generation to what they were 20 years. They sort of bond them with them in a different way. They make them part of the family. I honestly think you will not see a large amount of those ending up in adoption age. I'm quite positive.
I hope you're right.
Yeah, I just think that, the pet parent of today is different to the pet parent of, 15 years ago. And I believe that's a lot of the data that's coming back from the rescues as well, is they're not seeing a large return of animals back. Some of them have been through, I've read, families have returned back to work and school, or there's been they've had to move. If you're renting homes and you've had to move, sometimes that's a reason why you might put into a rescue or a home. But a lot of the times, and I think you'll see this too, Imogen, is that most people is trying to cope with the behavioural issues that when you've got a dog, is, you purchase this lovely pet and all of a sudden its behaviour and its temperament isn't sort of the style that suits you.
That's so true. I believe it is the number one reason for relinquishing a pet to a shelter is behaviour problems. So that's something for people to be very mindful of. During COVID especially, that, it's fantastic that we've got time to spend with our dogs and that we're getting to spend so much time with them. But it's so important to always remember to still train for the behaviours that you're going to need from your dog in a few months' time. So in terms of building up their independence, if you're going to eventually go back to work, or if you might be changing jobs and you might in the future have to be working from an office and not always from home, you do need to be training that in your puppy. If you're getting a puppy during this time, it's really important to deliberately train independent alone time so that dog then gets used to it and isn't completely not ill-equipped.
I tell Charlie, if he misbehaves, that if he doesn't lift his game, he'll be sent to a rescue or a pound. So I use it as a way of sort of discipline Charlie if he's misbehaving. But he never listens. He doesn't. He knows I'm only joking. He knows it doesn't work. He knows I'm only.
You're a soft at heart.
It's interesting. That's one thing I love about, I suppose, purchasing a pedigree dog is you know what temperament comes with a Labrador Retriever. You know what temperament you're going to get with a bull breed. You know what temperament you're going to get with a Boston Terrier. So one of the benefits of pedigree dog breeding is that there's an associated temperament with that breed, and you can work out whether it's going to suit your lifestyle. You know, a border collie needs a bit of work and just can't be left in the backyard unattended.
Yeah, and that was something that we noticed a lot through Right Paw as well, was that breeders were getting so much interest. A lot of breeders actually stopped breeding during COVID because they were worried about the number, where the dogs would go and people's sudden interest. And a lot of breeders actually sort of put their breeding plans on pause. But even those that were still breeding were just overwhelmed with people that were interested applications, inquiries from all angles. So it was very much about, for them, as you said, matching the right owners with the right dogs to make sure that they were matching someone that could, keep up with a border collie or someone that could cope with, a small apartment dog. It was really critical that we tried to help with that at Right Paw in terms of allowing breeders to really assess each of their owners and go through and match it with the right homes. But it's crucial, especially at the moment. A lot of people just applying for dogs, but need to make sure that the home environment really matches that dog as well.
And I love how you do that at Right Paw. If I'm a breeder and I've got puppies that need to go to the right home, the ability for you to at least screen that potential buyer for me to at least narrow it down to, instead of 100, because to 10 is great. And, you're asking the key questions the breeder needs, which is important to ensure that the breed that they're breeding goes to the right home. Health as well is important for you. I think it's great. I know if I was a breeder, and I'm talking to a lot of breeders daily, and one of the issues they have with COVID is that the demand is high, but the supply is just a bit lower. So all of a sudden they're getting lots and lots of phone calls, getting lots and lots of inquiries, to the stage where they don't even answer their phone.
That's what we've heard as well. People, yeah, it's, and I don't blame them. It's you're getting questions left, right and center, and it's tough. And we hear that a lot from buyers that are just struggling to get through to breeders as well.
So it's in one way you can say that what COVID has allowed us all to do is to sort of automate and streamline some processes. And that's even happening in the vet area, where you can you want clients to maybe apply for a few things more online and do some applications online instead of having to do some. And that's what Right Paw is doing. We have found that another huge area in ours is just the amount of online ordering, because people are at home and need to order their food or order their shampoo or order their DNA kits online, and our logistics department has almost doubled in 18 months.
I think it's everything is evolving and COVID's just accelerated that, but you have this sort of more modern owner now who's I'm interested, do you think owners that you've seen through the COVID period, are they more equipped, are they more prepared, do you think, for having puppies, or do you think maybe they've rushed into it? Maybe it's been a quick decision.
I think we see a variety of owners, and some who are more well equipped than others and have done more research than others. So, and that's not a new thing. There's always been a variety in how much people prepare for getting their pet. But I think the biggest thing that we do see is definitely, young couples or young families who may not have had a dog before, and suddenly they're in a position where they can now because they're at home more, and being very overwhelmed by how difficult and how much work it actually is to have a puppy. I think that's the biggest thing, especially a puppy in comparison to an adult dog. So I am seeing a lot of couples and families who are very exhausted and overwhelmed by that experience, even the ones who have done a lot of preparation, perhaps just as much so as the people who had no idea what they were getting themselves into. I think it's a lot more work than a lot of people think.
They definitely are. And let me tell you, they are challenging, and no one dog, no matter even within the breeding, within the litter, is going to have the same behavior and temperament exactly as the other one. It's they test you, and they're fun. You've got to have patience. And, these two bark when someone's out there, but they're fun. In the end, they look at you in a way that just, you give them a treat. What has been popular that we've seen in this breed-wise? I know, I think we might have chatted about what we're seeing popular when it comes to the of testing. What do you think, Nathan, if you had to take a guess walking around and looking at dogs, what do you think is becoming a popular breed that they all want to people want to buy?
I mean, I think if you look at sort of, the general market, you look at the searches and Google and what's happening, I would have to say it's probably one of the oodle crosses. I'd probably say the Cavoodle. That's probably, I think, the breed of choice maybe at the moment that people are very interested in. But I could be wrong. I don't know. I don't know what you've noticed as well.
Cavoodle, one of the oodles, is very popular, and I think you're right in that it's an easy breed. Its temperament's nice. It suits a lot of families. It's hardly got any little bit of aggression in it. It's low shedding. It's non-allergenic. It works well. It's one of the most popular. When I say popularity, I base it on the amount of dogs we're seeing through coming and testing.
So these are ones that the tests that you've seen most common in the last year.
So what volume we've seen in testing is, there's five, and that's one of them. I think it sits at number four.
Ooh, if that's number four, I was going to say my practice, I'm in Sydney, and we, in my area of Sydney, we're seeing a lot of oodles, probably more oodles than anything else. So I'd say maybe one of the other oodles would be on the list. We see a lot of groodles. That would be another one we see a lot of. Labradoodles. And I would say Labrador retrievers as well.
Labradors.
Purebred Labradors.
And French Bulldogs, I would say, probably. They're always very popular.
French Bulldogs. Of course.
Very, very popular. Popular because of the look that it has. It comes in a number of different colours now, which we're starting to see. And if you get a chance, or if listeners get a chance, I want you to Google Fluffy Merle French Bulldogs and have a look at something that looks like an extraterrestrial character. Yes, you heard it, Merle Fluffy French Bulldogs. So, we've got, and what I love about the French Bulldog people is they can twist colours and science into a language that makes no sense, because they've got things called platinum, they've got things called champagne in colour, they've got double platinums, they've got...
It's like a record, like selling records.
It's a record. No, it's like, I think maybe they've had a glass of champagne. So a champagne, don't ask me, I think is a dilute of a cream and a cocoa. So all these different combinations throw a particular colour. And unfortunately, I'm learning more and more about them. There's now fluffy, so they don't call them long hair, they call them a fluffy. So that's, we've now even, watch this space, we're starting Imogen to test and see some breed for a French Bulldog with a potential long tail.
Oh, very interesting.
Yes, I know. So there's a gene called the screw tail. We have detected some French Bulldogs that are a carrier of a screw tail, so now they're going to potentially breed two carriers together to get a long tail.
Wow. I mean, I've pulled it up on my computer. I'm looking at it now, the Fluffy Merles. Yeah, I'm looking at it in front of me.
You don't want to look at the price tag, because that's message me for price. No one lists the price, but anything north of $8,000. I've seen some advertised at close to $12,000. Oh, but, there is no price on these things, Nathan. You've got to understand it. These are, doesn't matter if you pay $1,000 or $12,000. These things are priceless. So that's number one breed. What do you think is number two breed? So, again, start to think about what the consumer wants, colors, varieties, the next trend.
Oh my God. It is. It's so trend based, isn't it? It's so interesting. I don't know how I feel about it, but I'm thinking like maybe, oh gosh, like a Dachshund.
So the Dachshund is now, we're seen to be the next French Bulldog. So popularity, why is it popular? You get those dapples, you get them in different colors as other than dapple, you get them in long haired, wire haired. And, it's, some people like a sausage dog. Now they have attitude. If you want a dog that's got attitude and barks and carries on, the Dachshund's it. I've got to give it to the Frenchie. The Frenchie is a quiet dog, like most bull breeds. Imogen, they don't bark much. They sort of come in, snore around a bit, sniff around. They've got a different look about them. The Dachshund yaps a lot, carries on a lot. You've got to be prepared to warn your neighbours when you've got a dash hound, and for some reason people think one dash hound's not enough, you've got to have two. So, and I'm sure as a vet, as a vet, there's a lot of issues seen in these brachycephalic breeds and the sausage dogs, but for some reason they are popular. And I think you hit it on the head, Nathan. Consumer drives popularity. It's a trend.
Yeah, it's true. It's very, very true. And I think breeders are becoming more aware of that, and they're trying to breed for what the public is interested in. But I think you'll find there's still a lot of debate in the breeding world as well around breeding for the market, breeding for pedigree. It's a very interesting debate. And I think that at the end of the day, as long as an owner is getting into it for the right reasons and they're going to love that dog and they're going to give it a good home, I think that's always just the most important thing. But there's, this is...
Nathan, yeah. I'm glad you got in there, because the last thing I want to do is upset any of the listeners. Pedigree versus non-pedigree versus oodle. It's sort of all, every breed and every type and every rescue, and it serves a purpose to someone. They're loving to someone. If you're passionate about your breed, that's great. If you're passionate about a rescue dog, well said. I completely agree. And if the consumer will drive what some of the market wants, welcome to how this world works, unfortunately. You're going to breed because there's a demand for them. If you want to breed your Lasso Apso because you like that breed, but there's not, it's your choice. But at the moment, everyone is Dachshunds, French Bulldogs. And let's say the younger generation, such as yourself and Imogen.
Oh, don't sell yourself short.
No. Tends to get into something because there's got to be an outcome. There's got to be something at the end of it, it's money at the end of it. So if you're going to get into breeding, there's got to be some commercial outcome. You're not, unfortunately, going to shows and trophies and ribbons are not what drives a lot of the younger generation.
A lot of younger breeders are trying to balance it almost as a career because they love doing it. And a lot of breeders, they often might be, it's a great excuse for them to be able to stay at home, to be with their dogs, to build a life around their dogs. So I think if they can do that, previously it was really hard. There are breeders who would have us, breeding was their second job. It was something that they did, as you said, as a hobby. And I think what we're seeing more and more is people who want to make breeding their life. And the way that they can do that is by trying to build a business around it. So it's a balance. And we've spoken a lot about new dogs, but I mean, George, I'm interested, how was Charlie the last year with you at home all the time?
Well, he has been fantastic because, I've been fortunate enough and I've been able to attend work pretty much every day during lockdown. I live 10 minutes from home. So I've got we had a business that could stay open based on these, comes into the office with me every day. Look, he's a companion that's pretty much with me. The only thing that's challenging him now, he does have Mary who's come into his life at the age of 12 years old, Charlie is, and he's, to his credit, he has been fantastic. He's accepted Mary along. The only tough thing I have now, and I don't know how people do it, is trying to walk two dogs at once. I've got one that just pulls and leads way, and I've got one that sort of trips over my feet and I've stepped on her three times. And
there's a lot of hand and eye coordination involved.
It's an art form.
It is an art form.
So what I've done is I've bought two leads that are exactly the same but only vary in colour. So Charlie's coped well in COVID. He's, if anything, I think it's, most dogs have probably got more walks, more social interaction.
More attention.
Yeah. So, maybe we're going to start to produce a whole, lot of dogs that need more cuddles. And which brings me on to this interesting topic that I wanted to get off my chest and I've been trying, is dog parks and going to dog parks and etiquette at dog parks.
You've had a bee in your bonnet about this for a little while, I know.
Nathan, it has been something that I've been wanting to I wish I could get a dog park etiquette expert on, but I have this real problem at dog parks where, you know, the way people think their dog needs to socialise with another dog. If you've got your dog on a lead and you're walking through an off-lead park, what is the etiquette? When you're sharing these off-lead parks, they are, you are meant to show effective control of your animal. And off-lead parks can also be used by people who just want to sit and use the park without a dog.
Yeah, it's I mean, off-lead parks, you do need to look after your dog when you're in those environments, because yeah, there's, you know, you've just got to keep a close eye on them. But sometimes the owners are worse than the dogs.
Thank you. I have an issue where I sometimes find a lot of incidents happen at off-lead parks where you're sort of enclosed, where the owner sits on.
Those are quite dangerous. Yeah, I think I've heard a lot, and a lot of breeders speak about this, that it's those sort of enclosed off-lead dog parks that actually have a lot of, they have a lot of problems.
That's absolutely what I say to new puppy or new rescue dog owners, that those parks, off-lead dog parks that are fully fenced, are great in one way because you know that you can, you know, let your dog off without worrying about it running into traffic. But unfortunately, that means that every other person there can also let their dog off without worrying about where it's running. So it attracts every single person who has never bothered to teach any recall, who has no control over their dog and just thinks, oh, it's great, I can go and have a coffee over here and chat to my friend and not look at my dog at all because it's safe, quote unquote safe. But it's definitely not a safe environment.
Yeah, and they sit on their phone. And they don't observe what their dog's doing and don't take control of it. Whereas I have another park where you can walk around. So I find walking around, so you're actually walking around with your dog and it's following you, it's with you, is a much better environment. A lot of people use the enclosed ones because they're just lazy. And another thing, Imogen, is people, sometimes my dog might not want to socialise with every dog. You know, my dog's a very social dog, but it has a temperament which sometimes it doesn't like particular dogs rushing at it. And I get this thing where they go, they're only dogs, you know, let them. No, it's just not that. You still need to be able to manage your, some dogs have a very timid temperament.
Absolutely, I totally agree. I think it part of having effective control over your dog is teaching good doggy manners. You know, just because your dog's friendly to every other dog doesn't mean that they should be rushing up to every dog, running full steam ahead with direct eye contact, really fast, straight to another dog's face. To be honest, that is not polite doggy manners. And, you know, that's quite antisocial. It's a bit too in your face. And that is just an absolute breeding ground for behavior problems, because all it takes is for your dog to completely freak out another dog just because they've you know, been too boisterous and they've scared it. Then they get bitten on the nose and, you know, that's it. That's all it takes for them to then become quite scared and potentially fear aggressive in the future. So it definitely, the effective control is so important for people.
And you can see it, dogs that have good doggy etiquette, you know, they're ones that are a bit more cautious. They'll, you know, they'll approach in their own time and they'll sniff and they'll get to know, and, you know, they won't, you know, be too boisterous. They'll, you know, some of them will even sit down next to them and just sort of, you know, acclimatize. So you can see the dogs that have very good doggy manners and doggy
yes.
etiquette.
The best thing to watch at a dog park is when you've got a beautiful larger dog playing with either a much smaller dog or an older dog playing with a puppy. And if the older dog or larger dog has got really good manners, it's so beautiful because they'll do a little run around in a circle. And then when the bigger dog is about to, you know, outrun the smaller dog, they just lie down and flop around so that they're less confrontational and let the other dog get a little bit, you know, a word in edgeways. And it's so cute to watch. It's fantastic.
Dogs work it out. I love it sometimes when, you know, when you see an older dog, they don't want to be disturbed. They don't need a puppy nipping at it. It comes to a doggy park. The old dog just wants to walk around, take its time, leave its messages where it has to, and not be involved in too much physical activity. I respect that. The young puppy, you know, nothing. There's nothing more that a dog hates than a puppy's bite, you know, those little sharp teeth and carry on. I mean, one of the ones that I got annoyed about was Charlie loves me throwing a ball and bringing it back and dropping it by my feet, and I pick it up and throw it again. And it was an incident where a woman's dog was hounding Charlie, trying to sort of get Charlie's ball, and it sort of caused it. So she came up, grabbed Charlie's ball and said, "You don't need to play with that. You need to socialize more with my dog."
Oh,
Yeah. So you can imagine Genetic George how upset he would have got. So I didn't stand back. And so rather than get into what it all panned out to, it was like, what you're telling me, because your dog is interrupting my dog's social activity, that he needs to stop playing with the ball and socialize with your dog because you're... Anyway, I don't want to go there. It's something we need to sort out, because it then leads me on to the next topic, Nathan, that's been really annoying me over the last 18 months.
Yeah, this is like George's grievances session. It's a therapy session. Like, it's a therapy session for George.
I need someone to listen to me because no one else is listening to me. So I need these. Is, you know what? When you've got a dog, there's one responsibility that you must do, and that is you've got to pick up its poo. I don't know about you, but the amount of dog, I'm going to say it, dog shit that is just not picked up is huge at the moment. So people get this dog, and the glamorous thing about it is you're walking it, but you know what? You've got to also pick up its poo. And I have had plenty of arguments with people who don't pick it up, and there are, and guess what their excuse? I don't have a bag. Well, here you go, I've got one. And your responsibility must be, you must bring a bag out. I think about 3 months ago, it got so bad that I was walking Charlie and Charlie stepped in dog poo. Now, if you want to see a funny reaction, watch the reaction of a dog stepping in dog's poo. It's they shake, and it's like, what have we done? We need to do something about
it. It's like, you know, whenever we leave for a walk, it's the ritual. It's, you know, phone, wallet, keys, poo bags. That's it. You know, it's just the ritual. I know Emmy keeps them in her handbag as a spare.
Yeah, I've got them everywhere. Yeah, I've got them at work as well. I find them everywhere. But good dog parks will have a supply of free dog bags as well. A lot of councils organise that. So people have got no excuse.
I hear you, Imogen, but you know, our council, they don't provide them. We can walk across the road to the other municipality and they've got them.
They've got to up their game.
Yeah, I won't mention the council, but their argument is it's not a responsibility of us to provide these bags. And I hear you, they should be. They should be at least at all off-lead parks, because it would then help reduce it. But their argument is it's not our responsibility, but I can walk across the road to the other council and I can grab some. And guess what? I do.
The public service announcement. For this episode, if listeners take away one thing, it's pick up your dog poo.
Yeah, pick up dog shit. That's it. I'm going to keep it simple. You've got to pick it up. I don't care about how messy it is. If you haven't got a bag, you can get yourself a leaf that's on the, you'll find there. I've had to do it. I've picked it up with an English oak, a couple of leaves, and done my best. Look, covering it up does work in certain areas. I wouldn't want you to cover it up on, you know, someone's nature strip. But if it's dropped it in some off the lead park, you can try. You can't find it. It's too small. You can cover it up. And, you know, sometimes dogs, and Charlie annoys me too, you walk them across this great park and then you'll be coming home and they'll want to drop their poo on some bitumen. You know, you've had all this great park to be able to do your poo, and you decide to drop it on bitumen. Which sort of leads me into this next area I wanted to talk about, which is great, that there is a huge organisation called Poo Prints, which actually generates millions and millions of dollars by DNA of poo.
That's amazing. Wow. What a cool name.
Yeah. Poo Prints. I didn't even know you could do that.
I know the guys very, very well, and it's great. You know, here's the line. They shit is their business. Because you can.
What a great tagline.
Isn't it? And he loves it. It's literally, I think last time I looked, it was a $7 million a year business from just poop DNA. They argue that 40% of people don't pick up poo. So the way they work in the US is that they work mainly through body corporates. And the great thing about DNA is we can extract it from pretty much everything.
Except ashes. We had a story a couple of weeks back about owners that were
almost everything. And but of course the quality and the quantity of DNA you can extract from poo won't be the same as blood, but it allows you to reference it to a sample. So of course what they do is they go to apartments, they obtain a saliva sample of all the reference dogs, and the body corporate agrees to it. And then any poo is referenced back to that sample, and it works. You know why? Because if you know if your dog's had its DNA taken for a reference sample, you will pick up your poo.
Absolutely. That's scary. I love that idea. Imagine if our apartment building could come and hunt us down, find out whether we'd been leaving poo behind.
It's a whole new level of policing.
Brilliant.
So I don't want hundreds of poo samples sent into Orivetting the next few weeks.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I don't envy the mail people, the mail clerks that have to be sorting through those, you know, doing a spot check on some of those envelopes and maybe being a bit surprised when they look inside. But I guess to bring it full circle as well, you know, we've been going through this sort of this lockdown for like the last 18 months, and we're trying to sort of, I guess, come to terms with it. But I guess like what happens next? You know, what does life look like in a post COVID world? I think it's, you know, we've got a lot more puppies around. We've got a lot more dogs in homes and families. You know, I don't know, Amy, what do you think is as we grow and as these puppies grow, you know, what do owners and breeders need to sort of think about and as we move forward?
I think probably the biggest priority for people is, as I said before, is to do with alone time and getting dogs used to spending time on their own.
We're going to need more vets. I'll tell you that, because there's, you know, more opportunities here for vets. People will be, you know, with more pets means, you know, big booms for pet food, people looking for different diets for their pets. I think what I see is maybe, you know, councils will have to provide more open space.
We're going to have to take that into account, like planning and dog and bigger dog park, more poo bags at dog parks.
And also, don't forget, with this, even state governments are changing some of the rental agreements now that you can't knock back a person if they have a pet. So I know in Victoria we've started to change some of those laws.
There's been a lot of strata debates.
I believe New South Wales is the same now. They have to be, the default has to be that you are allowed pets, I believe, and then they have to make it, the landlord has to make an exception.
That's it. There's no, can't discriminate.
I think what we're going to see is more regulation, because we'll have bigger numbers, so governments will become more involved in regulating and laws and, you know, health, making sure there's, you know, more, you know, vet checks, vaccinations for everything that you go to now for the dogs as well. I think it'll change. I'm starting to see a bit more government regulation in a lot of the discussion at the moment. Nathan, are you aware of anything that's coming through, you know, RSPC involved, talking to state members, managing breeding numbers?
I think that this is always a conversation about just having more transparency in the dog world and in the breeding world. And I know a lot of state governments are looking at, you know, how can we introduce more legislation or more management of the breeding world to try and uncover people that are flying under the radar or you know, those larger breeding facilities that are not abiding by the standards or have, you know, huge numbers of breeding dogs in very, very small facilities. So state governments are bringing in, I know WA is in the process of, you know, some states don't even have breeder numbers. WA, Tasmania, Northern Territory, there's no breeder registration number, no tracking of breeders. So I think that's the minimum. But even in states where they have quite good, you know, breeder records and transparency, just trying to bring more, I guess, more assessment and monitoring of those facilities. I mean, that's what we're trying to do at RightPaw as well. You know, we know that sometimes the state governments don't have the resources or the time to focus on it. So, you know, we do our own verification. We do our own checks of breeders when they come onto the platform to make sure that they, you know, we hold them to a standard. So it's, I think it's only going to become more important as more dogs are, you know, being sold and more breeders are coming into the environment. There just needs to be more transparency. And I think it's the most important thing that we can do.
So they have this BIN number, breeder identification number there. Who issues that number to them? Do you know much? Is this?
Yeah, no, this is an area we look at a lot. I mean, every state issues a breeder identification number. It's called different things in different states just to make life a little bit more confusing. So in Queensland, it's called a breeder identification number. In New South Wales, the same. In Queensland, it's the pet exchange register number. So they're all state issued numbers, which is great because it provides tracking for breeders and people, you know, members of the public are able to go in and check that they are registered. But in some ways it's actually, it is the minimum, but it's relatively easy to get those numbers. You know, you can go and apply for one through your local state registry. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you've been checked or that you've been looked at. So it's the minimum requirement, but there's a lot more that I think the governments need to do in order to police it. But again, that's where we try and come in and also help with that too.
Well, you know what? 20 years ago, they said the same thing about the tax file number. It was just a number. It was going to do nothing. There was no harm. It wasn't going to be. And guess what? Now it's the number that you use to find. So I think these numbers, when they start with a very simple purpose and then they evolve. Can I ask you a question? Is your BIN number different to your ANKC membership number?
It is in some states. It does get a little bit confusing because obviously the ANKC, very reputable. It's been around for a long time. And some state governments, if you're an ANKC member, you don't need a BIN number. This number is the same. So I know in Queensland and New South Wales, your BIN number can be your ANKC number. But in other states, you may need to have both. So it does get quite confusing. And, you know, we've had to spend a lot of time trying to work through this. But that, you know, it is hard also, you know, members of the public that don't necessarily look at this that often, you know, they're trying to make sense of these numbers and what's needed. But yeah, it is in some states, the ANKC number is also a mark of recognition of their identification.
Do you have to disclose your BIN number when you sell a puppy?
Yeah, you do. It's not a legal requirement in some states. So Queensland, absolutely. ACT, absolutely. Everyone has to have them. Whether you show it on the ad, it depends by state. But best practice is to show it. You know, you've got the number. You should be displaying that. It's just the right credible thing to do. So it is, I'd say, the way forward. You know, you need to have that as a minimum.
Yeah, maybe they should have just come up with a different acronym, BIN, you know, BIN number. It's like you're putting out your BIN, but
And just having a single state one, a single country, like you know, the states makes it very difficult, but, you know, that's the Australian system for you. We're a country of states and territories.
Well, it's good. You know, you're on top of all this BIN stuff, all this. You don't have a BIN number, do you, Nathan? Sounds to me like you're all...
No, I don't. But I do joke often with Imogen about, you know, by the end of the right paw journey, we'll probably be breeders ourselves. So I don't know, George, have you ever had the desire to become a breeder?
You know what? Everyone has a PhD in hindsight. And I should have done it 20 years ago. I should have got in. No, I just... Look, it just gets... You know, I look at it and I go, oh, why didn't I do this? For me, it's just time. It's not something that I have the space to do. And, you know, when I saw bringing in 12 puppies the other day, I thought, I can't do this, you know, moving one from one crate to the other. I don't know. I just stick to what I can do well. And I suppose with all the expertise, I probably should have been reading, but you know, I've learned a bit on when I go to shows and sat with some people who've showed me what to look at when you're selecting a dog based on, you know, the way it walks in the ring, the phenotype, you know, what you look for. I think if anything, I would have loved to have been a judge and an international judge, you know, flying around and being treated like royalty, but I've stuck with genetics, Nathan. But that's good to see that you're at least getting into the thinking about breeding, because who knows, in 20 years' time, you'll be able to go to the internet and go, right, I want a fluffy, platinum, French, long-haired bulldog. The algorithm will spit out the combinations and we'll just genetically clone one for you and manipulate it through all the DNA sequence and give you what you want.
Gosh, that's the world we'll be moving into, I think, gosh. But I think we've got a way to go.
So I think it's almost time to wind it up again. We've had another excellent chat.
I know. I think, but we've probably got one last thing to do. Is that right?
Of course. I've got the book here. Has it? Imogen last week picked something that was very exciting for all.
PFK deficiency?
Phosphofructokinase deficiency. Well done. Yes. We now, I think the next, it's your turn again, Nathan.
Oh, lucky me. Okay. Why don't we go for... Let's go for an early one, maybe number 8.
You know, this is the segment of the show that they all wait for.
I know. It's what keeps them listening to the very end.
It's probably the most informative part of the show where people actually learn something that's got really good value.
I learned a lot about dog poo personally.
Dog poo. Yeah, you know, you can make money off it. So you've chosen a really nice one for me. You said page 8, did you?
Yes, 8.
Well, controversial one. Nathan, why do you do this? Why couldn't you have chosen, you know, page 6? You have chosen a very controversial topic and one that is dear to Imogen's heart. It's the brachycephalic syndrome.
Wow, okay. I did not pre-plan this.
You've got this book there, haven't you? I know.
Yeah, deliberately.
Copy of this book there, and you're thinking, I am going to give George a nightmare. Brachycephalic syndrome. We could have a whole session on brachycephalic.
Oh, I think there's a whole episode.
There's a whole podcast in that for sure.
I, you know, it affected breeds. I don't need to tell you. We almost sort of touched on this, and the sad thing is I've got two of them sitting right here. I've got a Boston, I've got a Griffin, there's the Pug, there's the Pekingese, there's the British Bulldog, there's even the Stafford, some of the Staffords make it in, the Cavalier, King Charles, the Shih Tzu. It's one of those ones. I don't even think I need to read the page out because this is all, Imogen's taught all this stuff as soon as she enters vet school about brachycephalic syndrome. It's basically a short, broad head syndrome. It refers to the conformation of having a skull that is almost as wide as it is long. Interesting. We're going to sort of just keep this. Examples I've given you. There's a collection of anatomical abnormalities that can be found in brachycephalic breeds, and they vary in degrees that cause obstruction, that is narrowing of the upper wires. And these include things such as, this is why I should have done Latin at school, and I should have sent this straight to Imogen because these words would just flow off her tongue like you wouldn't believe. For me, these are tongue twisters. So quarterly displaced maxilla, Imogen, is that right, Mark?
Maxilla, I guess.
The upper jaws are further back than they should be due to the abnormalities of a short muzzle. An elongated soft palate. And it's interesting because when I get Charlie and Mary excited, Mary more than Charlie, she does this thing where she'll you know, thank God people can't see this.
Yeah, I was going to say, they can use their imaginations.
You know, when it's almost like there's something soft there and they're trying, what is that, Imogen?
Freaking back consult, no. That could easily be if she does have a bit of an elongated soft palate and if she's got big tonsils or a lot of sort of, you know, a lot of soft tissue in the back of her throat. Sometimes when they get excited and that gets a bit sort of swollen or, you know, warm, sometimes that can obstruct their airways a little bit and they have to essentially clear their throat a little bit because they find it harder to breathe in that situation. So some dogs will do it very, very subtly and you don't have to be brachycephalic to experience that. Even some dogs with a slightly longer soft palate will still experience that to it a little bit, but brachies are definitely more prone. The best thing to do in that situation is probably to ask her to lick something. So if you can put something like, you know, grab a bit of peanut butter and put it on your finger and then hold it in front of her nose, sometimes if they lick, that's a really nice way because they're sticking their tongue out. It's a really nice way of getting them to reset their soft palate and have a really good swallow. So that's what I was trying.
Interesting, because yeah, she does it when she's excited. And it sort of goes after you calm down. Well, just send me the bill, Imogen. That's at least that is a free consult.
No, that one's on right, Paul.
Good. And there's stenotic nares. There's a tortuous turbinates brackets, less room for airflow with nasal cavity closed brackets, everted laryngeal saccules brackets, soft tissue protruding into the middle of the larynx. And there's hyperplastic trachea. Wow, God, it's scary. Brachycephalic syndrome may have one or more of the above abnormalities. Wow, okay. So now I know why it is something that we all need to be concerned about. It is, although these dogs are great dogs, great temperaments, it is one of their negative things with brachycephalic breeds.
And as long as breeders are are mindful of this and they're breeding for the right traits and trying to improve the breed health standards. Like, yeah, because they are lovely dogs. They're amiable, they're friendly, they're expressive. They're the number one, you know, most popular breed that you tested in the last year. So it's just about making sure that we can breed them responsibly and breeding in the right way.
And as Nettie always writes, she does finish it off with really a nice little paragraph. And she says other management practices to avoid are: you don't exercise in hot conditions, right? Avoid obesity. You know, you try and keep your dog lean. Yeah. And which can put extra stress on the airway. So there's some simple ways you can manage it. Using a harness instead of a collar is another good way that will often help dogs with any hyperplastic tracheas. And it is important that any abnormal respiratory noise or pattern is fully investigated by your vet. Like a true vet, Nettie will always put a plug in for a vet, Nathan. You don't do anything with it. Yeah. As soon as possible. So, yeah, interesting. Nice choice again, that is. And the other news, there is no screen applicable for this conformational disorder.
But I reckon we can have a whole episode on this topic and it's a fascinating one. But it is, yeah, it's one of the most topical in the breeding and the vet world at the moment. So there you go. I promise you I didn't plan for that.
So it's good. Who would have thought we would have lasted three episodes? We have.
Yeah, three episodes. And I think we've done well. We've gone from COVID to popular breeds to dog parks and dog poo, and yeah, I think next week we'll have some great guests to bring on board as well. So yeah, thank you Imogen again for joining us for another episode.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And and George, we'll catch you next week.
Thanks guys, thanks Nathan, thanks Imogen, thanks listeners. We'll catch you all again next week.